This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and this is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars. Hey, Mike. Hey,
how's it going?
It's good, it's good. I'm excited to be here, because today we're going to talk about my namesake, the immortal Landru.
Yes.
Whether he's a computer or a scientist, he's the coolest dude around. And I'm excited to share a name with him, and I'm excited that today we get to talk about his amazing hair in the original series episode, Return of the Archons.
Yeah, we're doing a commentary.
We haven't done one of these in a while.
No, it's been a while. Yeah,
I forget how it works. How does it work?
Well, we start with having the episode paused at zero on the counter. You can choose whichever version of the episode you'd like, as long as it's not like the edited for television syndicated version. But you can choose the one with the original effects, or the ones with the new effects, or the, you know, Netflix, DVD, Blu-ray, whatever. Mm-hmm. It'll all work.
CBS All Access.
Yeah.
If you're already getting in on that.
Yeah.
In preparation for the new series, maybe you're going to like promote it internally by like watching all of Star Trek again on their app.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what versions they have, and what version of Next Generation they have.
I'm guessing they have the HD version of Next Gen, but I don't know about.
I wonder if it's the fixed version that was on Netflix. Questions,
probably.
Questions that need answers.
It's probably the fixed version. Yeah, but regardless of that, we will give a countdown. And then you can start it up with us simultaneously, or you don't have to watch the episode with us. We'll make it general enough that you can figure out what we're talking about if you've seen the episode before.
I hope you've seen the episode, because I'm going to be talking about Landru's hair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, spoiling the episode, for sure. You know. So, if you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, we can start it up in 3, 2, 1, start.
Hey, it's Mayberry.
Yeah, and they're running like crazy because they're being chased by unknown people.
They've got
people.
Cool tricorn hats.
Mm-hmm.
Like this episode is another mix of, well, we've got all these costumes.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do? We can run around in the backyard here, and we can wear these silly hats and these silly pants.
Wow, this is a rare occurrence. It's only 4:41 p.m. Central Time, and yet my cat is currently doing, very appropriately enough, what we commonly refer to in this house as red hour, where he gets all excited and starts running around the place like crazy, jumping up on the chair and then trying to get into the window. Now he just ran past me. You probably heard that, and it usually happens, you know, around like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. or something, you know. But here he is doing it right now.
My cat's being crazy too.
Wow.
Right now,
it's red hour, I guess.
I guess
very
worldwide.
Appropriately enough. Wow, our cats are excited. Hopefully, you are too.
So Sulu got zapped by the lawgiver's zapper, which in this case immediately like reforms him. Spoilers for later in the episode, they have a big machine for that. But Sulu's totally taken over.
I guess they have like a, you know, remote control version or something.
I don't know. So Sulu's babbling on about Archons and Landru and other awesome words. Everything gets weirdly out of focus when they move. cinematography is not very good this episode.
I think the cinematography is okay here. Yeah.
So everybody's really concerned about Sulu, who gets a lot to do. Takei normally doesn't have a lot to do, and here in this opener, I think he's done more in this episode than he did throughout the whole first season.
Well, he does the opening thing, right? But then he kind of disappears, right?
Right. And I then mean, they were just like, we've got him for a day, let's...
Well, at the end of the episode, he comes back in the most amazing fashion where they're like, how's Sulu? And then Scotty's like, Sulu's okay. And then it pans over to Sulu and he just kind of shrugs like, hey, yeah, I'm fine. And then sits down, you know? I love that. That's one of my favorite moments in all of Star Trek.
I'll see if I can't make that the cover image.
He's just like, yep, I'm good. Let me just sit down back in my station here. It's almost like he's like accepting a round of applause or something.
Was he confused? Was this not shot before live studio audience?
I don't know. It's strange.
Is that why there's so many pauses? You know, when people enter a room, they just stop talking for a couple minutes and then... I guess not. Season one, we had truncated opening credits there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching the remastered on Netflix, so I get one big, long shot, beauty shot of the Enterprise while Kirk is talking. I think you have three. Yeah, oh, well, no, I get another shot.
There's the one shot, which is, like, from right behind, like, even with the nacelles, and then there's the second shot where they're approaching the planet, and then they do the reverse, and then they do the standard left-to-right
wow.
flyby.
It's been a while since I watched this remastered, like... There was a cool shot, like a close-up of the Enterprise, and the camera was standing still. And as the Enterprise passed by, the camera started pushing in on the planet, mm-hmm. and you could see the city.
Oh, cool. So here they are in their disguise, which is something around, I guess, colonial America or something.
It
like
kind of looks like what everybody else is wearing in Spectre of the Gun.
Yeah.
So they all got their, I think... Are those all bolo ties or bolo ties special ones? They've got cheap-looking ribbon ties.
Yeah.
Everybody's walking around like zombies. Mm-hmm. Not like flesh-eating zombies, just mindless.
Yeah.
Deliberate steps. Everybody talks weird.
Now they're talking about the festival, which I know that we've debated like how often the festival occurs or whatever,
because mm-hmm.
they never say it inside the episode,
right?
But you know, I was looking through doing some research, I guess, on looking at these are the voyages, and in an earlier draft at least they say something like you know, oh, that's okay. Don't worry. It's over until next year, you know? So apparently this is a yearly thing.
Yeah, I read that the novelization is the same thing.
Yeah. So it's like this is, you know, they just happen to come at just the right time.
Right,
or just
the wrong
the
right
time
for it to be dangerous.
Like literally, like not even like that day, but like 2 minutes before this happens. And now everyone goes crazy.
For a whole night, but they call it the Red Hour.
Yeah, yeah. It is very similar to the Purge now, you know? I know this was before the Purge. But, yeah, yesterday I put in a Blu-ray and they had a trailer for the Purge before it. And it's like, wow, yeah. It's the exact same plot.
I spoilers for the Purge? I don't know.
No, I mean the premise. I've never actually seen The Purge, but the premise is basically like, you know, it's the near future, and society has calmed down a bit, but in order to sort of get everyone's, you know, aggressions out, there's one night a year where for like 6 hours or something like that, you can do whatever you want. There is no law.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what that is. Yeah.
I do feel bad for this town. Like, I'm glad. I hope that it's a year apart because they. Where did they get all those bricks?
Yeah.
Did they, like, tear down a building at 6 o'clock and just have bricks to throw at everybody?
I guess so. Maybe they have a brick manufacturer nearby who, just for the festival.
Mm-hmm. Get your festival bricks here. Get your festival bricks. They bounce off people's heads. They don't get hurt none. It's great.
So in the valley, people, like, come to the city for the festival? I guess people look forward to it, huh? Some people?
I don't know. Well, I mean, some people seem to be going crazy and other people seem to be more promiscuous. So I imagine that it might be like a tourist kind of thing. Like, you know, maybe come to the city and get lucky.
It's a strange, rather dense mythology, which doesn't make complete sense. You know, like, okay, there's these guys and they're not affected by it, really. It's like the younger people, but like, this guy's daughter clearly doesn't want to be there, but she has to be because it's part of the festival, or it's you know, the word of Landru, or I mean, you know, but like, these guys are old, so then they're not allowed to do this anymore.
Like, they're exempt or something.
Yeah. And they seem to be thinking freely, you know. Are they not of the body? Or what's going on?
I don't know. It's all convenient, like it's some kind of 60s TV show. And that's one of my favorite things, when he turned on the light, mm-hmm. you know, he just turns up this little flame, and then half a second later, all the studio lights come on.
Yeah. They that happens a couple times in some of the Indiana Jones movies, like when yeah. they're in the caves. That bothers me.
Kirk doesn't care. Kirk doesn't care about anything. He's just like, I'm the closest to cover that I'm going to give. He's kind of like James Bond. He'll mm-hmm. wear the outfit that, you know, so he'll kind of blend in. But if you ask him who he is, he's not going to give you a cover or anything. Yeah, I'm yeah. a starship captain. What? No, I mean, that I'll never get. James What's Bond that? Never has a cover. He's always just like, hey, James Bond.
Well, like, they deal with that in Casino Royale. You
not
know?
Really.
I mean, he says, like, look, you know, our cover is not going to do anything. He already knows who we are. If he's someone
right,
that we need to worry about.
Right, that one time. But when he's, like, meeting Goldfinger and stuff.
No. Oh, yeah.
He's like, hey, I'm James Bond. The spy? No, different James Bond.
But theoretically, I mean, you wouldn't know who James Bond was unless you're that connected, right?
Right, which the bad guys that you're trying to go undercover to find would know.
I guess so.
Yeah. Well, Goldfinger was beaten by this James Bond guy. You know, maybe we should pass this around to Blofeld.
Mm-hmm. So you picked this episode for, I mean, I guess some obvious reasons. mainly the Landru thing. But is it that you're a big fan of Landru, or is it just that you were like, that's a good name for me?
Well, the Landru thing came from Chris.
Uh-huh.
He just started calling me Landru, like, I think, like, my second episode on the Ready Room. So, and it just kind of stuck. I like it. I've used it as a screen name in a couple places where 005 was already taken. Spelled with an EW, for those who don't know. Just like my name. It works. No, I was never really a big fan of this episode before. The okay. network or anything like that.
But are you now?
Not really. I kind of just picked it because I wanted to talk about Landru before we closed out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they remember everything that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't seem very happy about whatever happened out there.
This is like... I don't know. I'm a little slow on the uptake here. It only took me 20 years to realize this. But, I mean, yes, this episode is, you know, totally all about, well, I think if you look at the time, communism, you know, it makes sense, you know, mm-hmm. Of the body, the one body, and how, you know, if everyone is the same, then you can't grow as a society and everything like that. And it's also about, you know, like, the dangers of technology and becoming reliant on technology, you know, and how, like, if our computers break, our life is just destroyed and we do not know how to function anymore, you know, which, you know, I can totally see that here and see it, you know, in today's society. He totally called that thing, right? But mm-hmm. on top of all that, it is very, very obviously an indictment of organized religion. Like, I mean, it's not even like subtle. Like, it's a false god who, you know, is controlling these people. Like, you've got these lawgivers or whatever, they're controlling these people and making them do things where they don't even know why they're doing them anymore. They're just doing them because this thing, Landru, is telling them to do this stuff. And, you know, everyone's like, you know, just sort of like, so it's become part of their society so much that, you know, they've sort of like lost the reasoning behind it, you know, like even to the point of it's like, Landru is a guy who his intentions were good back 6,000 years ago, but now it's gotten to the point where, you know, people are doing this because of something that doesn't apply to their society anymore. And there's a 6,000-year-old computer, you know, aka the Bible, which is, you know, controlling these people's lives, and even it doesn't know why, you know?
Huh.
I mean, and you look at it, it's like, this was a story which was written by Gene Roddenberry. Like, we've talked about some of the other things which he's, you know, either did or tried to do, like the God thing and everything like that. It's very clear that, you know, I mean, Branham Braga gave a whole lecture about how, you know, Star Trek is, you know, the great atheist mythology and everything like that. This is built into the show. And it's like so obvious. Like, I'm sitting here watching it yesterday and I'm like, How did I not see this? And more importantly, how did the network not see this? You know?
Yeah, I mean, stupid.
It's like they don't even hide it. They're like, it's a deity which isn't real, and you know, we're going to take it down. And then, you know, at the end of the thing, sort of like the lesson is, you know, they destroy Landru and they're like, well, we don't know what to do anymore. Because this was our whole, you know, everything that Landru, the way that we lived our lives was all through what Landru is saying. And now Landru is gone, so we don't know what to do. And Kirk is like, you'll figure it out. You've got to think for yourselves now. You know? I mean, that's, I mean, and it's just, like, they don't even hide it. It's just there. I don't know how I did not pick up on that like 20 years ago.
Yeah, our listeners are probably yelling at their cars. What on earth? How did you not see this? But I did not see this either. You blew my mind, man.
And then I started, because I'm like, am I really this dumb? You know? So the first I looked in These Are the Voyages to see if, you know, because I thought for sure there'd be like
network
notes.
Yeah, did we miss that somehow?
And no, they're all talking about like, oh, this is great because it's all about communism, you know, which I'm sure it was to a large extent, you know. And, but then, like, you know, I did it like a search online, and there are a lot of people who, you know, have talked about it, you know, a lot of people who are both praise this episode for that message and are also very critical of this episode for that message. But I just thought that was like, I mean, it's just like, how did I not? It's like in every frame, every sentence of this thing. I guess we need to watch these episodes. You know what we should do? Is we should watch the series again. And then we could do another 110 episodes on all the things that we didn't pick up on the first 15 times we watched them.
Nope.
So. All right. They're pretending to be of the body.
Yeah.
Walking through their thing. I like how, you know, even though they're actors, right? Like, they're acting badly at this. It's like in Shaun of the Dead when they're pretending to be zombies, you know?
Yeah.
Where, like, all the extras have it down. Like, you know, they know exactly how to move and everything like that. But these guys, like they're just off a little bit. They're like trying, but at the same time, you can tell they're not very good at it, you know? I like that. They're good at acting badly.
Mm-hmm. I like... So Landru, they get absorbed, and then he can control them. And, like, can see through them and stuff.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Which is weird, because is he seeing through Sulu now, or is Sulu, like, out of...
Out of range, maybe?
Out of range, yeah. Because you'd figure he wasn't... They wouldn't need to... I mean, how strong of a Wi-Fi signal does Landru have? I don't know.
The best.
He's got the best.
Oh, that Landru. Sorry.
Oh. I know your Wi-Fi is decent, right? You're watching this over Wi-Fi right now, right?
Yeah. I'm recording, and I guess Jessica's plugged in downstairs, but...
Yeah, you got a pretty good Wi-Fi signal going.
Yeah.
Certainly on par with this Landru.
No, I can't see through. I could see through all my devices if I really wanted to. Most of them have cameras.
I was going to say, right now you're looking through... you're looking at me through your device.
That's true.
I'm looking at you.
So you are of the body. You and your Boba Fett hoodie.
Yep. So this is a dungeon set which was used rather frequently.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. I'd reuse it.
Yeah, it's good.
I'd use it outside of television, but that's not important right now.
Like as a practical dungeon or like for movies?
That's what I'm saying, Mike. Okay. A lighting panel. So does like the Enterprise just like not have light? Like they actually just have glowing pieces of glass?
Was this from the Enterprise?
This is from the Archon.
I think that like whether or not this is technology that the Enterprise has, I think what they're saying is like this should not be here, you know? See, like he's like it doesn't make sense. He's like it's consistent with what we've seen, you know? Like the hollow tubes that they make a big deal out of, and they seem to be amazed by that. So it probably is technology which is past human technology,
definitely,
right?
And definitely, well, I don't know, maybe.
Because they're like, look at, because they're not like when the tube is used to like shoot someone, like they're not shocked by that. But when Spock picks up the tube, he's like, there's nothing in here. It's literally just a hollow tube. Like, and I get the impression that Spock is like, I don't even know how this technology works. You know, like if there was like a hammer and gunpowder or something, you'd think that he'd be like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But so I get the impression that. The Archons or whoever they was it the Archons or Landru I get Landru
right had, Landru and his technology
because the Archons are what Landru made up.
No, the Archons were the last people who came by the planet.
Okay, all right. So I get the impression that Landru's technology is higher than Federation technology or more advanced than Federation technology.
Could be. McCoy looking at his med stuff before he sticks it in people. I love that. Classic McCoy shot. Yeah, and it's weird that there is like an underground.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd think they must be really good at bad acting. You know, to blend in like that for years.
Yeah.
I mean, for 6,000 years, eventually you'd think you'd get everybody. They'd all be absorbed, and then they'd immediately get their kids absorbed, and it just... Maybe Landru doesn't notice when people disappear from the body, like he's so obsessed with getting new people? I don't know.
But how do people... I mean, this may be something that I missed, you know, in in this rewatch. I mean, obviously, I haven't picked up on much in this episode, but, like, how did they get out of the body to begin with? Or were they never in the body? And if they were never in the body, how do they avoid being in the body?
Exactly. That's my question. Like, maybe you can just fall out of the body. Maybe it is kind of like something that has to be renewed.
Here's my question. What's going on with Scotty's hair?
I don't know. It looks like a bad comb over.
Yeah. It's like he's got combed over bangs or something.
Yeah, that's why it looks weird. Because it's bangs.
What's he doing? Like he doesn't have that hair anywhere else in this series, you know? He's just trying something new this week.
That set is just so cheap looking.
And but again, it looks cool. It looks in like Disney World or something, you know?
It's Landru.
There he is.
I like Landru. He looks like Peter McNichol.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Kind of. That. Yeah, for sure. When Landru comes to the JJ-verse in Star Trek Excelsior, they got to get Peter McNichol to play him, right?
Yes. But we've already seen that story.
We've already seen it.
And he was a scientist.
Oh, well.
Because the timelines are different.
Yeah.
I raised my hands in victory. Mike Johnson is on my side.
I don't agree with you guys, by the way.
I know you don't. I don't care what you think, because I'm right.
Fair enough.
So Landru comes through the wall, like projects himself to be like, hey, guys, it's totally cool. I mean, like, I'm not going to force you to do this thing. I mean, I might. I probably will. But like, let me explain what's going on. The good must transcend the evil.
And this whole stuff is, you know, obviously definitely all about, you know, communism and stuff like that, which was obviously really, really big in the world at the time in terms of, you know, social issues and stuff. So that's cool. There's a lot going on in this episode, you know? You just kind of look at it at face value and you're like, there's a guy who built a computer, and then he talks the computer to death, and that's great and everything, but this episode has a lot of, you know, social commentary in it on a lot of different levels.
And not just the communism, the surface level. I mean, there's a surface level plot, and then there's the, oh, it's communism, and then it's the, oh, it's actually religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kirk, of course, is the last to pass out because he's Kirk.
Yeah, he's got the strongest will to not be affected by loud noises.
So now they're captured in the same set, but it's a different part of the dungeon.
Is it? Oh, I guess it is, huh?
Yeah, the beds and tables aren't there.
Oh. Well, it's, you know, this very sort of efficient modular architecture where you've got different rooms which are sort of like multi-purpose. So like you put a table in one and it's a dining room and you put a, you know,
are you talking about the sets or just the dungeon in the universe?
In the universe, right? You know, you put a big door on one that doesn't have a lock on it or doesn't have a handle on it, and then that's your prison, you know? They've got one with a hot tub in it, you know?
There was I think it's still around, up in Indy somewhere, there's a hotel called Fantasy Suites, and like each room is themed to like a different thing. Like there's a space room where we normally stayed when we were, you know, just wanted to get away for the weekend, my parents and I, and when I was a kid. It had like, you know, a spaceship waterbed, and you know, the walls looked like the surface of the moon and stuff, and they had a dungeon room, but each room had a hot tub, so that's what reminded me. And the room looked a lot like this set.
Yeah, they show a place like that in the movie Blue Valentine.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of those things where, like, it's supposed to be generic space room, but, like, you look at, like, all of the futuristic, like, computer display thingies, and it's all very much Okudagrams, like, to the point where they could probably get sued, you know? And I'm sure it was a real place, you know?
Interesting. So now they think they're figuring this out.
Yeah.
There's a computer. Because the way they reacted when they rebelled, I mean, I've never had my computer get all fussy when I'm like, no, computer, I don't want to do that. Because my computer doesn't tell me much to do much.
Mine does, you know. Like, you've got to update this program.
Yeah, yeah, that works.
You know?
Poor McCoy.
Yeah. Aww. But he does seem happy.
Yeah. Be cool if they had, like, different colored eyes or something. Super creepy.
I mean, it really is very similar to, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, mm-hmm. you know, which was a few years prior to this, but, and that was obviously all about communism.
Communism was a big deal.
Yeah.
Now look at him. Ha. DeForest is making his paycheck this week. Giving big speeches. Everybody gets something to do.
Yeah, except for Uhura.
She was really on much. Screen for she, a second.
Yeah, she did answer the phone at one point.
She was holding her finger to her ear.
Mm-hmm. No Chekhov yet.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that blonde guy with the blue eyes who I always think is Steve McQueen. But
he does look like... That's incredible. Was he the one who who was trying to shoot Landru the obvious holo projection?
I think so. He's the guy who repeatedly says things like, why are we doing this? Why don't we just leave? Why are we still here? And Kirk's like, we need to do something. We need stuff to do.
So he's
does make one point where he's like, they're like, look, there's, you know, Crewman O'Neill or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they're like, good, we got him. You know, which is like the whole point why we came down here. And he's like, so let's just leave now. And Kirk's like, no, I still don't know what's going on.
Figure it out from space?
Yeah, it's like, do we really care what's going on? Should we just get out of here? Although, you know, who knows if O'Neill and Sulu would still be affected.
Well, and now they've got the ship's in danger too, so Kirk can't leave until he turns off those heat beams.
Mm-hmm. And now we have this guy who's amazing because, he's cool in general, but also he pronounces every word differently from everyone else. Like, everyone says communing. Right. And then he's like, even this guy, he's like, happy communing. And then he goes, happy communing. And there's
maybe
another
he
word.
Was the one who was just like, so this is communism parallel. So I should pronounce it communing. Oh.
Damn. See, like, I didn't even pick up on that.
Oh, come on.
Okay. All right. See, this is what happens when you binge watch Star Trek at the age of 13. But yeah.
Here he goes again, complaining about the Steve McQueen looking guy complaining about him. Why can't we just do this? He's like the audience surrogate.
Yeah. He's like, come on. They're like simple, you know, they're easy to think. And Spock's like, they have technology which is beyond our own. Do you not see that? Are you not freaked out by this? No?
I mean, theoretically, he's a red shirt. He's been through this stuff before.
Yeah.
He's a red shirt who survived He's a super red shirt.
Those hooded costume things are rather terrifying. If I saw someone walk in with one of those, I'd be freaked out.
And this is just mean. This bit where Kirk's just like, hey, I'm of the body. There's nobody else around. There's nobody else around.
Maybe he's practicing, right?
Okay, I guess they do need to practice. We've established that already. Spock is sad. It is a good ending to that.
Yeah, to that act, it's though. Cheap. It's a very sort of serial cliffhanger thing. You yeah. know?
Same Kirk time, same Kirk channel.
My grandpa would always complain about that. Talk about how they'd go to the serials and there'd be Flash Gordon, and it's like Flash Gordon like literally blows up. and then in the next episode, you know, next week they come back and right before he blows up, you see him like jump off to the side and he's like, they did not do that last week. They are cheating. Yeah.
I've heard about the Batman serials.
Yeah.
From the 40s where that happens. Like, you know, Bruce Wayne's like handcuffed to the seat, you know, to the car steering wheel, and they show him in like an unbroken shot going over the edge of the cliff. And then in the next episode, they're like, aha, you know, see, he actually picked the lock and jumped off the side of it, just off the edge of the camera where the camera couldn't see it. It's like, but we saw him in the car.
I need to see those. You know, I've never watched them, but, you know, you can get them for like $3 at Walgreens, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, the production design and everything, it's like so cheap, but that's like the first on-screen Batman.
Yeah.
You know?
You can get them on Riff Tracks.
Oh, yeah?
Pre-made fun of.
I saw a clip one time where it had like a Batman climbing up a wall. And like, I guess because he's kind of like whatever, he does sort of some sort of acrobatic thing. You see Batman's pack of cigarettes fall out of his back pocket.
You know, and that's probably in character.
Yeah, probably.
It's the 40s. Who cared? There's nobody else there. Why is Kirk still? I guess he's just practicing. He's got his hand over his heart like most of the... Maybe he's pledging allegiance. Oh, that's true. Oh, because Bones is still spying on them.
Yeah, they're being all, you know.
So if Bones can see them, and Landru can see them, but Landru can't see through them, how can there be an underground?
Yeah, because...
Camera one, camera two. Where's camera two?
Right, Landru's like, what's going on, you know? How come I can't see through them? Yeah, no, that's a good point. Huh. Well...
We owned you, 50-year-old television show.
Yeah.
No, this is good episode though.
No, it is.
I mean, it does. There's a lot of talking, but it all has to do with the idea of having this society, this perfect society. I always saw it not even as a disruption of communism, but like. Having a perfect society and forcing people to do things, even if they act happy, doesn't make them happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah.
I'm going to talk this computer to death. That's what Kirk's just come up with. And nature's, you know... And then we get a lovely excuse of why the Prime Directive doesn't apply in this situation. Back when they pretended to care about the Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Directive is a good idea. But most of the time that drama is coming from them not following it.
But isn't this the first time that they use the Prime Directive?
I think it might be. So yeah. it's immediately in a throwaway line. Like, wouldn't the Prime Directive apply here? Nope. Run away.
I think I read that Gene Kuhn put it in there during like a polish, and you know, but he also you know put in that thing where it's like the society is not working. So, or you know, it's not growing. It's not a growing society. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the Prime Directive does not apply. Though it does seem strange, like you would think, like the Prime Directive, for one thing, you'd think that that would be something which was built into the show Bible.
Yeah.
Because it is, I mean, maybe at the time it wasn't. And you know, maybe Roddenberry or whoever saw it and was like, this is a thing that we need to make a big deal. But just given its place in Star Trek's history, you would think that it would be built into the show from the beginning. And you would also think that, like, the first time that it's dealt with, it's in like an episode which is fully dedicated to that concept, mm-hmm. you know? That never happened.
I like that when the lawgivers came in after McCoy threw the alarm, Kirk chops his in the arm and he immediately falls over. But Shatner tries to get like a chop at the neck as the guy's falling but misses. It's like, no, you weren't supposed to fall yet. I missed. Yeah. How did this underground last? These people immediately panicked as soon as somebody like punched a lawgiver. They're like, oh, he's no big deal. And then they're like, oh, crap, he's a huge deal.
Well, I mean, here's Uhura's big scene, by the way. But, you know, I do like the...
Sorry.
I do like Marplan's, you know, kind of like his reaction right here, which is just like he's freaking out, not because of like what's happening right now, but because he's like, damn, like we completely messed up. Like going back like probably generations before, you know, he was even born, he's just like freaking out over the fact that like his society is dead, you know? I mean, that like that's really how he's what he's, you know, concerned with there. And I think that that's kind of like a cool moment where he's just like, oh, God, you know, like this is really sort of like making him deal with that head on. And I don't know. It's a nice little moment. But
I like the mix of myth and fact that they have about Landru.
Yeah.
Like they know that. They were a culture destroying itself, and Landru came.
Oh, this is where he does it right here. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
They learned that Landru came and brought peace, but then like it melds into legend that you know he still lives and is still watching us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of where it goes, bends from communism to the religion aspect.
Yeah, I mean they're. Trying to make the facts fit inside the myth, mm-hmm. in a sense, you know? I mean, as minimal as these sets are, I think that they're pretty good for this episode, given the constraints.
Yeah, this particular, the Landru antechamber.
Yeah, and I do like how they're not just one thing. I mean, like, even though, like, let's say the costumes are colonial America, that's not necessarily what the production design
is.
Yeah,
once you get inside.
Because why would it be? It's not like it's mimicking, you know, they didn't, like, find a book on, you know, Paul Revere or something.
Alexander
but,
Hamilton.
You know,
let's make it timely.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I do like that that's kind of cool, how it's a mishmash of things in order to create this other society.
There's all kinds of different mixtures of media here. We've got stucco. Landru's projecting himself against a nice stucco wall here. Like a pueblo.
That's not good for projection. You want something that's like a very smooth surface, mm-hmm. you know, with like a decent amount of, you know, gain to it, but not so much that you're going to be washing out, you know, the black levels. It's, you know.
Should it be reflective in some case?
You want to try to minimize the reflection as much as possible because then you create hot spots.
Oh.
And when you're watching it, like, basically you can actually, like, as you move, like, across the room, you will see, like, a almost like a spotlight effect, like, in a specific place. Mm-hmm. So you want to try to avoid that as much as possible. That's why silver screens are not super popular and are only present in places which use polarized 3D, because the silver maintains the polarization of the light.
Oh.
But like for things like Dolby 3D, which has some sort of weird waveform thing, you can actually do it with a white screen, which is very beneficial. So, yeah.
It's your cinematic lesson for the week.
There you go. And there is the one and only.
Yeah, he's just an old computer with four buttons.
Which is pretty advanced. I mean, what? The iPhone only has four buttons, right?
That's a very true statement.
That's all you need.
So which one activates Landru's Siri?
I have to turn off my thing because yesterday while recording commentary Trek Stars with John, four times in the course of the episode, my phone turned itself on and was trying to figure out what I was asking Siri.
So you'd accidentally said something similar to "Hey Siri"? That's impressive.
I guess so. Four times, though? That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I guess you were talking about Simon Pegg, which kind of sounds like Siri. Not Maybe. At all.
Oh, well. I do like the zigzaggy light thing.
Yeah, it's my new favorite part now.
Especially since, like, you don't even need, like, a zigzaggy light bulb behind it, right? Like, it's just, like, a transparency.
Yeah.
And then you just have a light just go down, and you can only see it through the zigzaggy transparent part.
I love that. I can't. You know, yeah, I know what you're saying, but it's just, it's weird that. It's impressive how effective that is.
Yeah. And then they speed it up. Look, right here. Oh, my God. It's going faster. It's cool. You know, it's interesting. Like, Spock's hair is iconic. You know, there's only one Spock haircut and everything like that. The other day I was watching Into Darkness, and, you know, Spock's haircut is designed for a close-up like this. Mm-hmm. But like in watching Into Darkness, there are a couple shots at just the right angle with Zachary Quinto where he's got the haircut and he's running. Mm-hmm. And the effect is really interesting because his sideburns start flapping like a dog with really floppy ears or something like that. Next time you watch Into Darkness, look for it.
I knew there was something weird about his hair when he was running. I just didn't put it to that.
Doesn't quite have the effect they were going for. So this is it. This is the first time that Kirk talks a computer to death, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And then these guys come in. I like how terrified
yeah,
they are.
Yeah, they're like, oh, crap.
I don't know what to do. And Kirk's just like, whatever, I got this.
And so this is about, like, now we're getting the moral of the story. Like, creativity is, you know, free thought. That's what life is about. It's not just about being happy. It's about being free. America.
Yeah. Right. Free thought, you know, and the ability to grow, the ability to, you know, actually have society progress to something more than it is now, you mm-hmm. know? And I mean, going back to the religious thing, I think, you know, what the commentary there is like, you know, if you're so focused on following the rules of, you know, something that was written 2,000 years ago that you're going to be limiting the amount of stuff that you can do in the future. You know, sooner or later, those rules are going to conflict with, you know, progress. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's, we're seeing that right now with the whole, you know,
Starbucks red cups.
No, I was thinking, marriage equality, oh, but yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah, same thing, too. I guess, right? You know?
If I were you, I'd start looking for another job, Kirk says.
Yep. I know. He's like, so, I mean, like, it's they're like, probably like, what does that even I mean? Win. Like, it's like, we don't even have money, probably right? Like, another job? What's a job, you know? And there's Sulu with this thing where he's like, hey, yeah, I'm good. Let me sit back down in my chair. You're elite.
Beta 3, terrible planet name.
Beta 3?
Yeah.
In star system
Sigma C11. Alpha, you know, let's give a couple of them together.
Yeah. I do like how even though he is very sort of like nonchalant about it, like, whatever, guys, you're all good. Like, he does send someone down there to be like, here, let me kind of sort of point you in, you know, let me show you your options now that you need to create a society.
Freedom. You need to do more than just make bricks to throw at people one time a year.
This is what a job is, you know, that thing that he said you were going to need.
Yeah, and not only do we get the fact that, you know, like Kirk's like, I'll leave some people behind, we get a report from those people. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost its own sequel.
Yep. And that's only in the first few hours, right?
Yeah.
You know?
People have already started bitching and complaining about things.
It would be interesting if they were to go back there and just see like what it was like, and it was
they wiped each other out. They wiped each
red hour on a, you know, hourly basis. You know, it's always red hour somewhere in the world. Yeah, this was one of the original like set of story ideas that Roddenberry pitched for the show, which is kind of cool. Oh, Star Trek.
Yeah. I was the first lawgiver in that episode. None of the other ones are labeled, but first lawgiver, he wins.
Sid Haig is the first lawgiver. Okay, Sid Haig. Do you know who Sid Haig is?
No, teach me.
He is a horror, occult horror movie icon.
Really?
Who is in a ton of weird movies, including, well, I guess he's kind of best known now for like Rob Zombie movies like The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. But he's also shown up in a number of Tarantino things, including Jackie Brown and Kill Bill Volume 2. In Kill Bill Volume 2, he's the bartender at the strip club.
At the strip club, the what's his name works at?
Yeah, where he comes in, he's like, bud,
yeah,
you're late again, you know? He's like, go, you know, and then, like, you know, he's like, you know, what's his name, wants to see you, you know?
Yeah.
That guy.
Oh, well, cool.
He's the first lawgiver. Crazy.
Wonder what that does to your Star Trek Tarantino theory.
The shared universe thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to look into it.
Well, that was, I mean, it's a good episode.
Yeah.
I guess we should kind of break it down. It's a completely different episode now that you pointed that out halfway through.
We'll have to watch it again and then do another commentary on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just interesting because, I mean, you do hear about, you know, that all the time, you know, Roddenberry talking about it and, you know, people talking about how that is built into the show and everything. And, you know, there are some specific instances for sure, which you can point to, but this one is just like super blatant, And I've never noticed it.
Yeah, it's super obvious now, but it's not.
Yeah, and all the listeners are like, of course it's super obvious. You know, how did it take you guys this long to figure this out, you know? But sorry, guys, you know?
That's why we're getting new hosts in here.
Yeah, I'm sure if Norm and Jeff were to watch this episode, they would have been, you know, right on top of that. But
Jeff's already wrote a book about it.
Oh, well.
Well, it was fun talking about Landru today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I don't know if I'd watch it again, but if you haven't seen it, I would suggest you... I mean, you kind of have to. Like you said to me, you kind of have to. If you're going to be an original series fan, you got to watch all the original series crew doing stuff.
The Ready Room.
Here's one more thing I want to throw out here for you guys. Recasting this episode, because I know you guys like to do this on To the Journey with things, with mm-hmm. series and such. I think that Ma'ab should be played by Will Ferrell.
Yeah! To the Journey!
Bravo to the holodeck.
Bravo to the holodeck. Bravo to science!
Yes, for coming to the truth.
Commentary, Trek stars.
If they came out and they were like, Damon Lindelof is working on the show, it would be like Jets and Sharks in the streets.
That heart on Twitter would burst into flames like it was being held by Molaram or something, you know?
The 602 Club.
So what we have here is an origin trilogy. And I think that's what's so brilliant about Skyfall, is that by the time you get to the end of Skyfall, you have put Bond back exactly where he belongs, but you've also made him new and modern. And it's an incredible trick to pull off.
Literary Treks.
It definitely starts in a very dark place, and it doesn't get much brighter at all, you know, until we get to the end, and you know, there's some hope there. But yeah, definitely, it's a dark book.
Women at Warp.
Basically, they're overturned by Riker being sexy.
Well, to be fair, Riker's sexiness has been used to save the day on numerous occasions.
Meta Treks.
That would have just been a grand moment if, you know, George Takei would have played Tuvix, you know, and when the transporter accident happens, he's standing there in those colorful clothes and just says, oh my.
Oh my.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek talk. You find them on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or you can just stream from the website. Visit Trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. We have an email here from Christopher in Florida. Hello, Drew and Mike. I recently learned that two of my favorite hosts were leaving Standard Orbit. I listened to nearly every episode of the podcast. I enjoyed your in-depth analysis of TOS. This is my favorite part of anything. Most of all, I will miss your unique, slow-paced style of podcasting, which rarely had overlapping dialogue. The effect of hearing Standard Orbit was like reading a good book after having a stressful day, which is amazing. Thank you, Mike and Drew, for producing and hosting a great program for Trek fans. I'm eager to hear Standard Orbit's new direction, but you will be missed. Here's one last question regarding the original series. Many episodes, at least three, were about creepy children. I refer specifically to the episodes And the Children Shall Lead, Charlie X, and Miri. Was this theme inspired from a single writer, or was it coincidentally written by various individuals? Your fan always, Christopher.
Well, thanks, Christopher. You know, I mean, I'm glad that you appreciate our style, because usually when I listen to us and then I hear like Earl Grey or something like that, I think, boy, we're really slow and boring.
I think the same thing. That's really funny.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's interesting because like, I guess people have different responses to things where, you know, it's calm and soothing to Christopher, like, I think of it as sort of like, this is going to put me to sleep, right?
Well, I mean, what soothes one puts another to sleep, sure.
I guess so, yeah. But anyway, I'm glad that someone does appreciate that style.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, for sure. As far as those episodes are concerned, they are all written by three different people. But I don't know. You know, I mean, like, where you've got, like, a showrunner or whoever, even though, well, he wasn't the showrunner in season three, but it is a series created by Gene Roddenberry. I don't know if it was coincidence or if that has to do with Gene Roddenberry's view of children, you know?
Poor Rod.
Well, I think this was before Rod,
it
right?
Was. It was.
Okay.
But no, that was my thought, that children are just naturally creepy. I mean, I can watch a lot of movies, but I don't like movies where kids are in peril or there are dead kids, like The Shining. I don't want to watch The Shining because it has both, and I don't like that. Dead kids are scary is the thing. I got through Sixth Sense somehow, but
well, he's not dead.
Yeah, but there were dead kids in it.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah. Have you? So you haven't seen The Shining?
No.
Oh.
I should have went and saw it. They were having it at the drive-thru or drive-in. And
see, I'd be scared to see The Shining at the drive-in because have you ever seen Twister?
Yes. Yeah. Now I remember we've had this conversation.
Have we?
I don't know. Right. But yeah, I've had that pointed out before. The Twister is showing The Shining. And when the big hurricane comes and knocks over Grandma's house.
Yeah, yeah. Tornado. Yeah.
What did I say?
Hurricane.
Well, it's timely.
Whatever.
I'm trying to make everything timely. It's not going very well. If you want to send a timely email, you can send your thoughts by going to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose Send a Show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use a tab in the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary, Trek Stars. Right now we're covering Simon Pegg, and in the episode that just dropped on Friday, we're talking about the first movie that Pegg wrote, which is Shaun of the Dead. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com doing commentary Track Star Babies. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DUBLEOFIVE, and on the Babel Conference and various other places around the internet. So before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, I have a book which is called Star Trek Into Darkness.
I've never heard of it.
Well, it's written by Alan Dean Foster and narrated by Alice Eve. If for those other people who are not familiar with it, the publisher's summary reads, the official movie tie-in novelization to the highly anticipated sequel to 2009's blockbuster feature film, Star Trek. Pioneering director J.J. Abrams has delivered an explosive action thriller that takes Star Trek into darkness. When the crew of the Enterprise is called back home, they find an unstoppable force of terror from within their own organization has detonated the fleet and everything it stands for, leaving the world in a state of crisis. With a personal score to settle, Captain Kirk leads a manhunt to a war zone world to capture a one-man weapon of mass destruction. As our heroes are propelled into an epic chess game of life and death, love will be challenged, friendships will be torn apart, and sacrifices must be made for the only family Kirk has left, his crew. And you can get this book for free since you listen to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on those classic books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. We'd also like to thank Richard Rutledge Jr. and Renee Roberts for being our associate producers this week by supporting us on Patreon. You can find Richard on Twitter at RUT8972 and Renee at MRES_1701.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. And if you want to help them keep us in orbit, you can go to patreon.com/trekfm. You'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as associate producer like Renee and Richard. Chris just did like a video, a really cool video showing patron.zone, the site that he created for all the wallpapers and early episode access, and like previews of new shows like Metatrex premiered there like a week before we even announced that there was going to be a new show.
Yeah.
All kinds of unique and cool stuff in there. Ringtones, yeah. Like the other side of the room, and all those great catchphrases from Ready Room.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of stuff on there. And there's, I think, going to be more to come. There's other perks and everything like that. The patrons round table is a very popular thing, and I believe the donation level at which you can participate in that is being reduced, and they're going to be expanding it and everything.
Wow.
And it should be cool. Yeah, so get in on that.
Yeah, and all that money goes toward the cost of hosting and distribution, which is really expensive because we host with the best.
Yeah. And because people keep on listening. If so many people didn't listen, then it wouldn't, you know?
I know. It wouldn't cost so much money if people didn't download everything all the time.
I think we should just have less listeners. I think that would make everything simpler.
Or less shows.
Yeah, that too.
If we just had one show with one listener, we could probably do it for free.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
But no, we have to have all this quality content, all this super popular fans, and be included as, you know, one of the premier networks on iTunes. And
we should do our part and stop making this show.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do to reduce the budget.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can go to patreon.com/trekfm to check out everything that we have available. Well, next week, we've got another special guest. Tell us about the special guest. You've already spoken to him before.
We have spoken to him before. His name is Ben Robinson, and he's got a long history with Star Trek, going back to working on the Star Trek magazine back in the day, and I think even before that. And now he's probably best known to Star Trek fans as the guy responsible for the Eagle Moss Starship collections.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's the guy who basically runs that and does the magazines and everything like that. And he has a very, very dense knowledge of Star Trek history, you know, through interviews and everything that he's done, you know, in the magazines and whatnot. And one of his passions is the history of Star Trek Phase 2. And he's going to come on and tell us a whole bunch of stuff about Phase 2, which we don't know.
Cool.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It fits in with our post-TOS Dark Times theme that we've been going for the last few episodes. So
exactly, yeah. So it should be cool.
That will be cool.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening this week. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landrew.
Mr. Chekhov. Take us out of orbit, ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.